Another bevacizumab sort of practical question. Mm-hmm. How do you approach the question of bevacizumab on progression? You have a patient, you give them FOLFOX plus bevacizumab, you continue it?
That's a very good question, and the answer is nobody knows. And there are studies that are in development right now to answer that question. One of the problems with the data that we have has been that the standard of care in colon cancer has changed so rapidly, which is a good thing, that it's been difficult to catch up and sort of fill in all the gaps. Now, the standard frontline regimen is chemotherapy, usually an oxaliplatin, but also or irinotecan-based regimen with a fluoropyrimidine together with bevacizumab. Now, it turns out there's also the second-line trial, the ECOG 3200 trial, which Bruce Giantonio presented at ASCO this year, which showed that FOLFOX plus bevacizumab in patients who are Avastin or bevacizumab naive, who had failed on irinotecan-containing regimen, that the combination of FOLFOX plus bevacizumab was better than FOLFOX alone, or actually bevacizumab alone. That's a group of patients that doesn't exist anymore. There are very few patients that don't get bevacizumab frontline. So the question that comes up depends on how it works. If the only way that bevacizumab works is by blocking the growth of new blood vessels, maybe when those people progress, that giving it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, if the way that it works is by facilitating the delivery of chemotherapy, perhaps then it would make some sense. However, there is a resounding lack of data for this. There are a number of trials that are in development right this minute to try to answer that question. I think it's a crucial question for a number of reasons. One is that if it doesn't work, we are exposing patients to potential toxicity that they would not necessarily need. Second of all, from an economic standpoint, that it becomes extremely costly to treat patients, particularly if we don't have any benefit. I think it is critical to do those trials now, because the other example where this has happened is trastuzumab or Herceptin, where by the time people had talking about doing the trials, it had already worked its way into clinical practice where it was basically Herceptin plus whatever chemotherapy that you wanted until the patient died. I think that we need to do those trials now before it becomes ingrained in clinical practice without any data for that.
What do you do in your own practice?
I have a discussion with the patient. I have to say that, you know, theoretically it could make sense. However, there may be more toxicity. And if I cannot put the patient on a clinical trial, obviously with any particular place, we try to put a patient on a clinical trial, being in an academic medical center, I give that as an option. And, you know, we actually discussed this today with a case, and I kind of sheepishly raised my hand and said, yes, I will give it to some patients. This is the dynamic tension between the physician, you know, whose charge is to take care of the patient, and the medical community, which is to make certain that we do things in as efficiently and as cost-effectively and as safely as possible.